10 WICH. Shelley Martinez in for Kesee Rice. I am so excited because in my travels, I get to meet a lot of exciting people. And one of the people I met was Mary Lou Giannotti. And she is from a development and program manager for the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter. And I just thought this is so relevant for our audience because we have so many questions. But my very first question, first I want to welcome you.
Thank you so much, Shelley. I am delighted to be here, and I'm actually shocked you think I'm exciting, but I will take it.
I will be. I call it exciting because I know that a lot of ears will perk up, including my own. I think I'm going to ask you why, how you got involved. As you can tell, Mary Lou has a beautiful voice. She was in radio for some time.
I was, and you have a beautiful voice.
Oh,
so this is
you.
The Mutual Admiration Society today. Okay,
I can like go this. For that.
Okay, let's do it.
You're good, I'm good.
All right, you're good.
Listen, we'll go back and forth.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And plus, we're adorable.
Well, thank you.
Too
I do
adorable
agree.
For radio, by
yes,
the way.
We don't have faces for radio, as the old saying goes.
Well, sometimes. But anyways, I'm glad you're here. And I wanted to ask you, my very first question is, how did a radio lady like yourself get into this particular line of work? By the way, I think it's very important.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Shelley. So my career has evolved since my days as a radio announcer. And my role with the Alzheimer's Association involves a lot of outreach, communication, and education, which, of course, if you are comfortable speaking to a group or you're comfortable giving a presentation, which I love doing, that's a huge part of what I do. So having been in radio was really an amazing opportunity to train to do presentations and whatnot. But at the Alzheimer's Association, we share our why. And my why involves my late grandmother, my late father, and my late father-in-law, because all of them lived with dementia. And my dad had a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. We were told while he was alive it was probable Alzheimer's. And after he died, they determined it was advanced Alzheimer's. But my grandmother and father-in-law, excuse me, had very nebulous diagnoses. So with the Alzheimer's Association, we really exist to provide resources. And what I will share with you is my first, shall we say, introduction to Alzheimer's was probably when I was about 14 years old. And this was the early 1980s. I am a Gen Xer. Excuse me. And my grandmother was turning 80, my Nana. And she had been the valedictorian of her graduating class. She was always very well put together, very articulate, a really smart lady. And she looked disheveled. And she was behaving erratically. And she was actually physically combative to my aunt hitting her at her 80th birthday party.
Oh,
and it was
yes.
very unsettling because Alzheimer's is a lot more than memory loss. It can involve agitation and combativeness and wandering and anxiety and depression. So there were a lot of like hushed whispers and conversations at my house that I grew up in among my parents about my grandmother, and soon she was moved to a long-term care facility. Now, in the early 1980s, we weren't using the term Alzheimer's disease. They said she was senile or had hardening of the arteries. However, as an adult and as someone who worked for the Alzheimer's Association, it is very clear to me that my grandmother was suffering from Alzheimer's. Fast forward several years later, my dad gets diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he was exhibiting behavior that was, quote unquote, not normal. My dad would always misplace and lose things, but now it was becoming more frequent and more, shall we say, troublesome. One time he was at my house and he was saying, "Where's my hat? You took my hat. Where's my hat?" The hat was on his head. Eventually, at one time, I'm sitting on the couch with my dad, and by this time we knew he had full-blown dementia, and he's having a conversation with me, and my father was the parent of two sons and two daughters. I am the youngest. And he's telling me about his two daughters. So he tells me about his daughter, Anne, who's a teacher. And yes, my sister is named Anne, and she's a teacher. And then he starts telling me about his other daughter, Anne, who he said at the time worked for the bishop, and that was correct. I worked for the Diocese of Norwich in their fundraising office. But he did not know that I was his daughter, Mary Lou. Mary Lou at the time was working for the diocese, but he was having a conversation with me as if I were someone he had just met on the street. So that can be very heartbreaking. Fast forward, a few years later, my father has since passed. My father-in-law, who had been a longtime teacher, starts exhibiting behavior that's troubling. It was his birthday. We invited him out to one of his favorite pizza restaurants in New London, a place that had been there decades. Mm-hmm. An hour goes by, he's not there. An hour and a half, we call him on a cell. He had gotten lost. He did not know how to get there. His uncle passes away. The funeral is at a church that he had been to for many years. He didn't go because he couldn't find his way to the church. And we knew, along with some other warning signs, that something was happening. So loving someone with dementia has happened to me with three very impactful figures in my life. What we say at the Alzheimer's Association, if you know one person with Alzheimer's disease, you know one person with Alzheimer's disease, because it presents itself very differently with each individual.
Well, in the end, why you're here, and we, I appreciate that. Why it's very, because I had a mother, of course,
okay,
and we get, and she had dementia, but she probably had Alzheimer's disease, because what I felt when you were talking is that they had medical problems, and it seemed that she had a big medical problem. Then right after that, she got to home and she was different, and she exhibited some, every time she was poor in health. Is that similar, or is that, is, and also I wanted to ask you, what is the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease?
Okay, so first we're going to address that, Shelley. So Alzheimer's is a disease of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's is a progressive and degenerative disease of the brain, and it's got some biological hallmarks, amyloid proteins, plaque on the brain.
Oh, goodness.
Yes, yes. Tau tangles, all that fun stuff. So as I say to people, think of your brain, and then think of maybe you're frying something in the pan. And when you fry something in the pan or you saute something, you're going to have some residue, some oil. You really don't want to pour that oil down the kitchen sink because it will clog the sink.
Gotcha.
So with Alzheimer's disease, there is some clogging of the brain that occurs. So your brain is sick. Your brain is unhealthy. It is a progressive, degenerative disease of the brain. Dementia is a syndrome of symptoms. So think of dementia as if you would think of a fever. So if somebody has Alzheimer's disease, they will have dementia. Dementia includes memory loss. Dementia can include wandering. It can include anxiety. It can include depression. It can include combativeness, difficulty performing activities of daily life. So dementia is a syndrome of symptoms. It's an umbrella term.
Oh, I see.
So think of it this way. You have a fever of 101.
Mm-hmm.
You don't call in and say to your boss, "Hi, I can't come in today, I have fever." You call your boss and say, "Hi, I can't come in today, I've got the flu, and I've got a fever as the result of the flu." Or, "I've got COVID, and I've got a fever as the result of COVID."
Mm-hmm.
So dementia is the result of something. So people can have dementia if they have Parkinson's disease. Sometimes half of those who have Parkinson's will develop dementia. They can have dementia if they've had a stroke. That is called vascular dementia. They can have dementia if they've had a mini stroke, a transient ischemic attack, if they have Lewy body disorder, if they have frontotemporal dementia. Sometimes alcohol abuse can lead to dementia, or severe drug abuse. So if you've been a chronic alcoholic, or, you know, and again, it's an umbrella term. It's a general term. So Alzheimer's is a specific disease.
I see.
Yes.
So really you'd have to go and get diagnosed.
Yes. Correct. Correct. Which can be very challenging. Which can be very challenging.
That's what I'm thinking if you have somebody, an older person that you take care of, like my mom, you might use that umbrella term and say, I mean, what's the difference? Is it treatable? I want to take a break, and I want to give everybody a chance to, if you have a question for Mary Lou, she's very articulate. My goodness.
Thank you.
It's you know what, I was thinking to myself, I really want to talk about this, is really important topic, but it's almost, it's bigger than I thought. You know, everybody wants it because you say umbrella term. That's what I was thinking when I think of Alzheimer's, is it's an umbrella term for everything. But it's an actual disease, and it has actual symptoms, and it's so interesting. And I want to know more about that, but I want to take a break. Come back with your phone calls, 860-889-5252. AM 1380. 1410 WYCH. Always have to have an intro, Mary Lou, because I need to get situated.
I love it, Shelley. The legal ID. The legal ID.
Oh, it's so funny. I'm so glad you're here. Mary Lou Gennady.
Yes.
Gennady. And we're talking about Alzheimer's disease. You are the development and program manager, and you've serviced a lot of counties, including New London County. You said two counties, and Windham as well, did you say?
Well, my territory, so the Alzheimer's Association is a national organization, and the Connecticut chapter is statewide, so we serve all cities and towns in Connecticut. My focus in eastern Connecticut is all of New London County, mm-hmm. all of Windham County, and some parts of Middlesex County.
You are a busy girl.
I am a busy lady. a rolling stone gathers no moss, so I am boots on the ground. I might be doing an educational program in Putnam one day, and then I'm doing an educational program. I presented the other day for the Lifelong Learners, mm-hmm. the Adventures in Lifelong Learning at Three Rivers. We talked about the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's. It was a great presentation, a wonderful, engaged group. I speak at Rotary groups, and then I also plan Walk to End Alzheimer's Eastern Connecticut with a great group of volunteers, and we do other events along the way. So we are just exceptionally busy because, you know what, Shelley, our work is not done. And we also work really hard to provide hope. We have support groups. We have resources. We have early stage groups. We have fun activities at the Lebanon Senior Center and other places. Mm-hmm. So we're always working to improve people's lives, offering care, support, advocacy, resources, and most importantly, education, because a lot of people are very poorly informed. You can take away one thing. Alzheimer's and dementia are not a normal part of aging. It should not be thought of as a rite of passage. We also have a helpline people can call, 1-800-272-3900.
I have it here, yes. And I will leave it in the studio. The phone's ringing, and we'll get to the phones. Hold on one second. Hi, WICH, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Mary Lou?
Yes, I do. I would like to know if Alzheimer's is hereditary, or does it seem to run in families? Because I have no one in either side of my family, and I want to know if that makes a person safe.
Okay, so what I will share with you, and good morning. Thank you so much for calling in. So the biggest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease is actually age, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. This does not mean that if you live to the ripe old age of 90, you will have Alzheimer's disease. I have an aunt down in Florida. She is 92. Turning 92. She's 91, turning 92, and she is going strong. Sharp as a tack, plays words with friends. So that does not mean as you age you will get this, but age is a risk factor. And we are living longer, Shelley. You know, years ago, people were dying of dental infections and diseases that we can now manage. Heredity is also a risk factor, but this is what I want to share with you, caller. The Alzheimer's Association works very hard to educate people about modifying our risk factors. So we work hard to provide hope. I don't want this to be a session on doom and gloom.
Right.
We want some smiles and some hope. So we talk about how can you modify your risk factors. My father, may he rest in peace, had Alzheimer's disease. My father also used to like to do 12-ounce curls, which means he drank an awful lot of beer. I choose not to engage in the sport of 12-ounce curls because I know that alcohol abuse is not good for my brain. Mm-hmm. So I have modified my risk. I have the genetic risk, but I've chosen to modify my risk. I exercise 7 days a week. We know exercise is very good for you. Mm-hmm. I maintain a healthy weight. Having a healthy weight is good for you. I work hard to keep my blood pressure in check. Now, I happen to be a tall and thin person, but I have cholesterol that's off the charts because I inherited that. So you know, there are some things that we cannot help with our genetics.
Right, but there's some things in our control.
Yes, and also, Shelley, we talk about, like, you are what you eat. What are you eating? Are you mm-hmm. eating a Mediterranean diet? Are you eating the Mind diet? Or are you going to the fast food section? Or are you going to the frozen food section and buying processed foods? And I know affordability is a risk factor.
Right.
But are you buying those really terribly processed foods that are very high in sodium? Some of our research has actually shown, you know, we've done clinical research in which we see a 30% higher risk of people having Alzheimer's mm-hmm. who are eating a diet that is high in processed foods. So again, women are 2/3 more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than men. And also people who are African-American or Latino have a higher risk than someone who is Caucasian. So there are some risk factors, again, that we recognize, but we work hard to educate people to live a healthy life and modify those risk factors. I hope this helps to answer the question.
Did that answer your question?
Yes. It's very deep. It's a very complicated disease.
It seems to be, and I'm glad, Mary Lou's. Thank you, by the way, for your call. Appreciate it. I think a lot of folks are thinking kind of the same thing as this caller. What can I do? Is that what I have to look forward to? Because the aging, of course, you said is unfortunately we all age.
We do.
So I like that you're offering the hope, and you're not just the doom and gloom lady here from the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter. But I like that you're offering that we have ways to alter our future.
We do. And Shelley, one thing that we talk about, we understand that we are serving people with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And again, all dementia. Like, our goal is to end this disease. Our goal is to find cures and not just a cure. And our goal is to make this a conversation. Our goal is, say, for instance, you're a woman, you're 40 years old, you know that every year you should have a mammogram. What are we doing for our brain? What conversations are we having with our primary care doctor to address that? We've learned it becomes a doorknob conversation. It's kind of the last thing that you talk about as you're leaving. Oh, and by the way, doc, I have this. And we also don't want people to be so frightened, because what I like to share with people is my husband will tell me that I am quote-unquote spacey. I am an intelligent woman, but I can be absent-minded. So several times a day, I will misplace my cell phone, I will misplace my keys, and sometimes the glasses that are on my head and not on my nose, I can't find. That is not me showing symptoms of Alzheimer's dementia. That's me multitasking, doing too much, and just being flighty. When your activities are a disruption of daily life, when your memory loss is impacting daily life, when the bills are not getting paid, when the electricity is shutting off, when there is a fire because you forget to turn the stove off, mm-hmm. when things are impacting daily life, when you're unable to retrace your steps, when I misplace my phone, I will say, okay, I was in the bathroom, I was in the bedroom, I was here, I was there, I was downstairs, I put a load of laundry in, oh, here's my phone,
right.
It's next to the
mm-hmm.
washing machine. I can retrace my steps. Someone with Alzheimer's or dementia will not be able to retrace their steps. We provide help and hope for the care partners as well, because what we find, it is very challenging for someone who is living with this disease, mm-hmm. because
That's
in the
what
early
I was
stages,
thinking, yeah.
they, you know, we had a presenter at one of our conferences, and we have amazing conferences. We have a conference coming up in May, actually May 2nd,
oh.
and it is the Dementia Care Professionals Conference. People can go on our website, alz.org/CT. They can find information on that. But a presenter at one of our conferences said, and she had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she was in the early stages, I want people to look at me like I'm still me. You know, don't treat me differently. I am still me. We know the disease will progress. You know, this is, again, something that we're trying to stop. But we have resources for the care partners because they're dealing with a lot of stress. My mom cared for my dad, and she wanted to keep him at home. And that becomes very difficult because ultimately your loved one will not be able to do the simple tasks of daily hygiene. They will not be able to prepare that meal. They will not be able to get in the car and drive. So the care partners are very burdened with stress.
Yeah, right? It's 24/7.
Yeah, it's 24/7. And we know there are 80,000 people in Connecticut living with Alzheimer's. There are 6 million people nationally living with Alzheimer's disease, but triple that number, Shelley, and those are the care partners, and the care partners aren't necessarily paid professionals. They are the wives, they are the husbands, and they are the adult children. Maybe it's a best friend. You know, it could be somebody who has teenagers at home and then a parent who is doing poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So these are people very burdened with stress, so we work hard to provide them with resources as well.
I'm so glad you're here, Mary Lou. I think a lot of folks, they think when this happens, it is a hopeless situation. There's nowhere to go. and no one thinks that there are options and there are referrals. And you gave me all this great information, and
yes,
I appreciate it. I'm going to keep it here in Stu's studio. So if anybody has any questions, including the helpline, because I know folks that are listening right now, they're probably crying because they didn't know. They didn't know where to go. They didn't know that there's options and resources, and they're not alone.
They are not alone. And our helpline again, Shelley, I will share the number. It is 1-800-272-3900. 1-800-272-3900. And people can actually request what is called a dementia care consultation.
Mm.
We do this at no charge. Again, we fundraise. We have walks in Connecticut. We have a walk September 28th at Ocean Beach Park. People are welcome to join us. We'd love to see them. But the dementia care consultations can really provide people with the resources they need. And might I do a shout out? I work with volunteers, but we work with a lot of volunteer community educators.
Mm-hmm.
If you have been impassioned by what I was saying, I'm looking for people like you, Shelley, like me, who like to talk in front of people, who like to share their story, who like to share their why. We want people in the community to come forward and work as awareness champions or community educators.
Wonderful.
And they can help us. We do a lot of education programs in the region. This is how people learn. On June 4th, we are going to be at the Rose City Senior Center, mm-hmm. and we are doing alls in your community. We're going to share our resources. There will be some information in the Senior Center newsletter. We'll hopefully get some information to you and to also to some of our local papers. But we want people to come see us and learn what we're doing in the community. And I mean, we have a quote-unquote half hour today. We've skimmed the surface.
I was thinking the same thing.
Insane.
This is just the scratching.
Yes.
And it's so much deeper than I ever even thought of. And as somebody who has been with somebody who taken care of somebody, been a caretaker, I think to myself, wow, if only I would have known, if only I had tuned into ICH, because you don't get any sleep. You have to take care of them 24/7. The big cooking meals was huge for me. Meals that she liked. One time she didn't like what I cooked, and she threw it down my toilet.
Oh,
my
no.
God. But things like that, I know that people can relate to the simple things. Taking care of somebody 24/7 is a lot on our plates. And you are like a breath of fresh air on the radio. I think to myself, it's just a wealth of information. And if I was a person right now listening, I would say, wow, this, you are a godsend, because there are a lot of folks out there right now that don't know where to turn. And this is a start. There's always a beginning. And this is a great opportunity for people to find out more. So again, I want you, we'll give that telephone number. And our phones aren't ringing, but I think people are listening, because you've given us so much information. And I know you have to leave. It's 10:29. I don't know. We're going to take a break, and I'll come back. If anybody has any more questions, give us a call at 860-889-5252. But I know Mary Lou has to take off, but we'll take a quick break. AM 1310 WICH. We're back. And Mary, I was talking to Mary Lou. You probably heard it. I didn't turn off my mic. Oh, well. But I'm so glad she offered to stay a little bit, a while longer, I think. And I'm glad, because just talking to you makes me feel so much better as a caregiver of somebody. It was very difficult. So I think you empathize, because you were aware, because you've done it. There's a lot of folks out there who may have questions. 860-889-5252. And thanks for staying, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. And Shelley, and I want to share something. And when I give my presentations, you know, again, there, Alzheimer's and dementia are not fun, but there mm-hmm. are moments that sometimes you will have that you can share. And I like to tell this story about my father-in-law. One thing we learn when people are living with Alzheimer's and dementia, that sometimes when they're in the early stages, and I want to share this with you, there are stages of Alzheimer's disease. When you're in the early stages, you might still be working, you might still be driving, you might still be having like meaningful relationships and conversations. In the more moderate, the memory loss is more marked. In the advanced, you might be in a long-term care facility, or you need help toileting, and you need help, you know, with mm-hmm. with getting fed and things such as that. But a lot of times the person with Alzheimer's disease in the early stages is aware something's happening and they're trying to compensate for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's fake it till you make it. And I share this story about my father-in-law. My father-in-law, Jerry Giannotti, retired Montville High School teacher, was a larger-than-life character. And my husband knew that he was failing. I don't want to say failing, but the activities of daily life, the disruptions were very clear. But my father-in-law was trying to compensate for this. Now, we also share with people, when you really are looking for that definitive diagnosis, you really should look into services. And again, I don't want to tell people what to do, but we recommend seeing a neurologist, a geriatrician, a geriatric psychiatrist, or someone who specializes in diseases of the aging. This is not a knock to your primary care physician, but you, as a consumer of healthcare, really want to work hard to find that individual who specializes in this.
Right.
And I know that there are barriers. Insurance can be a barrier. Relationships can be a barrier. But I share this story about my father-in-law. My father-in-law went to his primary care physician and was given a very general memory test. And my father-in-law had been very witty and charming, and the doctor said to my father-in-law, "Jerry, who is the president of the United States?"
Oh, yeah.
My father-in-law responded, "Hey, what do I know? What do I care? I didn't vote for the guy anyway. Hey, bada bing, boom, bam." So the doctor said to my husband, "Your father's the same old Jerry." My husband said he doesn't know who the president is. But my father-in-law was so adept at fooling people and covering up that he used his charm and his wit to compensate for that.
Wow.
So, and everyone has that story, like, you have your good days and your bad days.
Yeah.
So your loved one will be doing really poorly, and all of these things will be happening at home. The day they go for the memory test, they're as sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
So there can be challenges for families.
We got a phone call. Okay, go ahead and do that. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, wow. Hey, Shelley, you're my breath of fresh air. I told you that.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome, see? And Mary Lou, I had a girlfriend in high school. I never knew she had a crush on me. Mary Lou Martin. She joined the Marines, and I joined the Navy. And she was a sweetheart. But listen, my grandmother was 94 on my dad's side. And I got three other brothers, man. We go up to Pocono Mountains to visit her every summer. She called me, my name is Joe, and she called me Sean, my brother Mike. She called me Paul. She was losing it back then, and we just ignored it. And that was 72. We buried her 30 years later. I think, I forget what year it was, 92? Yeah. And, she had to go down to my grandparents, and I'm sorry, my uncle Tommy and my aunt Joan, who was a lieutenant colonel in Air Force. And they took care of her for over 20-some years.
Oh, wow.
And then
finally
realized she died of Alzheimer's.
Oh.
When did they recognize these people losing their... Because she didn't have it. And
okay.
She couldn't live up in the mountains up there in the Poconos by herself. They took her and... It's crazy.
Okay.
When did they recognize it? I'm talking 70s when I recognized it as a young kid.
All right. Great. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Well, interesting that he should share that. So Alzheimer's disease was identified by Dr. Alzheimer's.
Oh, there
Dr.
you go.
Dr. Alzheimer, believe it or not, Alois Alzheimer, in the early 1900s, he had a patient, noted that the patient was behaving erratically. The patient thought that people were stealing her money. There was suspiciousness, agitation, and the greatest symptom was memory loss. He did an autopsy of her brain after she had passed and noticed that there was a buildup of protein and plaque. So the early 1900s, this doctor identified this disease of the brain. We were not talking about Alzheimer's in the United States until the early 1980s, believe it or not. And only until recently were we treating the symptoms, Shelley. There are medications available to help to alleviate some of the symptoms, but that doesn't mean they go away.
Mm-hmm.
There is no silver bullet. But now we are in what we call an era of treatment. There are there is an over-the-counter medications available by prescription, infusion. The most notable one is called Leqembi, and you have to meet the criteria. You have to be in the early stages. It helps to eliminate some of the plaques and the tau tangles on the brain. It is not a silver bullet. It doesn't mean they're all going away, But the goal is to offer people more memories and more time. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not an endorsement of any pro or con medication, but part of our research is ultimately finding a cure and or cures. So if we can provide quality of life for people, and if we can continue on this pathway, so now another medication is being trialed, donanemab. They are a classification that is called a monoclonal antibody, and I had the good fortune of working in clinical research for a handful of years prior to this job, so I have a real passion for that. But these are being trialed through the Food and Drug Administration, and the clinical trial results thus far are showing very positive results. So again, there is no silver bullet, there is no quick fix,
right.
But we are now in an era of treatment, which is amazing, so that shows we're in an era of promise.
And also information. I mean,
yes.
You just having the Alzheimer's chapters here and as a referral, like I said, we have more information, and that's very important. I got a phone call. I'm going to go right to the phone. Hey, WICH, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Shelley, back by popular demand.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Huh?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, I love your guest, Mary Lou.
She's the best.
Do remember Mr. Giannotti, teacher at Marfa High, where I went to school. But she's an excellent guest because she explains things very simply. And I love what I heard so far. And I learned more today than I did yesterday. And which I feel that it gives you a little less, the more you know, the little less fear that you have.
That's it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, and I'm glad you knew my father-in-law. He was a character. He was larger than life. He was an amazing artist. He was an art teacher at Montville High. What is very sad is at the end of his life, he could not hold a pencil.
Mm.
He probably had Alzheimer's disease, but he had been diagnosed with probable Alzheimer's, but it could have been a combination of several different conditions that caused dementia. And it was challenging. It was very challenging, but it was nonverbal at the end of his life. Mm. But what was very interesting is he spoke Italian as a child and reverted back when he was in the nursing home to speaking Italian. And that is not unusual for a lot of people with Alzheimer's disease. Wow. Sometimes they go back to that original language. So that is something that we know. But I do like to share my stories with him. And as one of our volunteers said, and I think this is a very profound statement, if you think Alzheimer's disease is difficult for you as a child or a loved one, as a care partner, think of the person with it and how difficult it is for them.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, my husband...
You know, and yeah. And I know my cousin worked at a nursing facility, and I was discussing with her because there's a few family members that had the same thing. So she says that's what they do, you know, their behavior, and this is how it works. So the more you know, really, the less fear that you have when something is different and you know what to expect. So thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. And, you know, I think a lot of folks don't want to think about it, all right? Let's just be real. I don't want to think. I'm 63. I don't want to think about it. And like she said, getting the information, knowing it's not so scary.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we are, again, we're working hard to change the course of this disease. This is our ultimate goal, to end alls and all dementia. And also to provide hope and compassion and kindness. And that is what we do. And Shelley, I didn't know about these resources when we were going through this. And you know, we were dealing with a lot of stress, a lot of family stress. Sometimes, you know, I tell people that in many ways, we often talk about alcoholism being a family disease. With Alzheimer's disease, family members take on a role. You've got your care partner, you've got your codependent, you've got your martyr, you've got maybe the prodigal son, you've got, you know, siblings. Oh, mom was always like this. No, mom's really failing. I mean, it can create a lot of friction with the family. But again, we have services, We have resources. People can visit our website, alz.org. They can come to our walk if maybe they're a little reluctant to make a phone call. Again, our helpline is 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Come to our walk in September. Talk to some of our volunteers. Come see what it's all about. We call that the world's biggest support group. Again, 6 in Connecticut, 600 nationwide.
You had mentioned that you're going to be doing something at the Norwich Senior Center.
Yes.
Could you just write that down?
Yes. So at the Norwich Senior Center on June 4th, we are doing Alzheimer's in Your Community. So basically what that is, and I'm just bringing up my calendar, is we are going to be talking about what is Alzheimer's? What is dementia? It's happening from 1 to 2 at the Rose City Senior Center. What is Alzheimer's? What is dementia? What is the difference? What are some of our resources? What are some of the ways you can get involved as a volunteer? How can you learn more? What are some action steps to take? So we're going to do this. I will be there. Come and say hello. And I will be there with some of the incredibly talented people that I work with and the kind and compassionate people that I work with. Mm-hmm. Many of us at our Connecticut chapter have a connection to this disease, and we have a why. And if you want to share your why, join us in June.
We've had so much fun just chit-chatting with you. I just love listening to your voice. I'm like, wow, this girl's great.
Oh, ditto. Right back at you.
No. We're going to start this go-roundabout. Mary Lou Giannotti, thank you so much for your time. She gave us extra 15 minutes, and I think you gave us a lot of information, a lot of things to chew on. People are kind of going, I didn't know, sitting back and maybe not so apprehensive to ask more questions for their doctor. I think you gave them a place to start, and I think that's really important. So thanks again for your time, for coming on. And I invite you to come on again.
Anytime. I love it. Because you know what, Shelley? We have so many events, like our Dementia Care Conference, our conference, New England Conference for Dementia Care Professionals. That's happening next week. I invite anyone, if you have a computer, alz.org/CT. Learn about our resources. You can find us. You can find my contact information on there under the staff. You can see our lovely organizational chart. I think it's a pretty good picture, if I do say so myself.
You got to have a good picture.
Yes, yes.
But
you can see who's who and who does what.
Yeah.
And we're all working very hard, especially in this region, to change the course of this disease.
Thanks for giving us, our listeners, hope. Because I think right now it is kind of a scary thing. And it's not, there's ways to prevent it. There's also outreach. And there's just a lot more than I think a lot more information than we had at 10 o'clock. So I appreciate the 45 minutes you gave us. I truly do.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And I will come back anytime.
Oh, very good. All right, Mary Lou Giannotti, and thanks so much for your time. And I'm going to keep these things in the studio, in Stu's studio, if anybody has any questions. And maybe, you must have a Facebook page. Maybe
yes.
We'll repost your Facebook page on the WISH Facebook page in case the links or something be easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a Walk to End Alzheimer's Eastern Connecticut Facebook group. Anyone could join, and it's
great.
Open. And we also have a Connecticut chapter Facebook page. So we have a lot of resources locally in that people can get involved and start talking.
And I will put the information about your walk in September in our public service announcements so we know, and we'll talk about that as well. Again, thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Shelley, and keep up the amazing work. You do a great service for the community.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.